Good morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Friday, January the 28th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. The government of Malawi has declared a national disaster in areas hit by Cyclone Ana, which killed at least 19 people in the country.
I've been heavily affected, for instance, Ngowe, Mulilima, Lundu, Kasisi, and Maseya.
Burkina Faso's coup leaders have yet to say if they will install a civilian or military leader after deposing President Roch Kabore.
We have called for the immediate release of President Kabore and other government officials and for a return to civilian-led government and constitutional order.
U.S. Ambassador to Burkina Faso, Sandra Clark. We have an exclusive interview ahead in the show. And Kenya's nomadic herders are among those suffering the most from recurring drought that kills the livestock they depend on. We'll have those stories plus sports coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And for our top story, Burkina Faso's coup leaders have yet to say if they will install a civilian or military leader after deposing President Roch Kabore, who has since resigned formally. In an exclusive interview with VOA, U.S. Ambassador to Burkina Faso Sandra Clark says that if the military installs its own leader, Washington could cut support to the country. Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou.
In an exclusive interview, Ambassador Sandra Clark said the United States is closely monitoring the situation.
We are carefully evaluating the events on the ground for any possible impact on our assistance. This is a very fluid situation and things are evolving. However, I would note that U.S. law does require a review and possible suspension of assistance in cases where a democratically elected government is deposed by unconstitutional means.
The junta has yet to announce whether it plans to install a military or a civilian president as the new ruler. If a civilian is selected, it may mean a continuation of support from the United States, which has provided counterterrorism training to Burkinabe troops as well as funding. Ambassador Clark says the US would like to see democratic rule restored.
We have called for the immediate release of President Kabore and other government officials and for a return to civilian-led government and constitutional order. And we urge all sides to remain calm and to seek dialogue to address grievances.
Burkina Faso has been locked in a six-year conflict with armed groups linked to Islamic State, Al-Qaeda and local bandits. The military has suffered a string of significant defeats to the groups in recent months. France also has a special forces unit stationed in the country and provides air and intelligence support to the Burkinabe military. Meanwhile, there's widespread agreement among Burkinabes that the status quo with the country's current military partners needs to change. More than 1,000 people attended a demonstration Tuesday in the capital, Ouagadougou. Speakers called for military support, which has occurred in neighbouring Mali in recent weeks. Alexander Ivanov, the official representative of Russian military trainers in the Central African Republic, issued a statement offering training to the Burkinabe military on Tuesday. Analyst Andrew Leibovich with the European Council on Foreign Relations was asked by VOA why support for Russian intervention is growing.
As anti-French sentiment has grown, as skepticism has grown, and as people have grown increasingly concerned and frustrated with the security situation, that blame has fallen, oftentimes fairly or not, on the traditional partners, on the current partners.
There has been no further word on the whereabouts of former President Kabore, whom the military arrested on Monday. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
The government of Malawi has declared a national disaster in areas hit this week by Cyclone Ana, which killed at least 19 people in the country and also caused scores of casualties in Madagascar, Mozambique and Zimbabwe. Malawi's President Lazarus Chakwera appealed Wednesday for urgent assistance for an estimated 50,000 families left homeless by the storm's heavy floods. The situation is set to worsen with more rain expected this week as Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
In a statement, President Chakwera appealed for humanitarian assistance from UN agencies, NGOs, the international donor community, the local private sector, and individual well-wishers. The declaration follows a preliminary assessment Wednesday from the Department of Disaster Management, indicating that more than half of the country's 28 districts have been affected. The hardest hit districts include Chikwawa, Nsanje, Mulanje, and Palombe, where roads have been cut off and bridges washed away. Chibiro Kamula is a spokesperson for Department of Disaster Management Affairs.
For Chikwawa, the M1 road has been cut off at Tabwa and in Chalo, and a number of OTAs have been heavily affected. For instance, Ngowe, Mulilima, Lundu, Kasisi, and Maseya. With respect to Nsanje, a number of households are feared to be trapped by floods.
The government has deployed soldiers and police and engaged Malawi's Red Cross Society to undertake search and rescue operations. The government says although some humanitarian partners already have started providing relief, more assistance is needed to meet the increasing number of affected people. The thousands of displaced say they lack food, clothes, and shelter. Paul Tanibu is country director for the World Food Program in Malawi. He told VOA the WFP is getting ready to start providing aid to flood victims.
We would be helping with DODMA, the Disaster Management Administration, to provide food or cash to people that need. We would be able to provide some logistic support because we have some vehicles that can work even in some of the muddier road conditions.
Tanibu says currently the WFP is making its own assessment of the situation.
We would expect the results of those assessments to be coming out early next week. At the moment, we have provided a boat, and UNICEF has also provided a boat to help with the search and rescue.
Malawi's Meteorological Department warns the situation is set to worsen with more rain expected Thursday. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
And still in Malawi, the main opposition Democratic Progressives Party, DPP, is calling on President Lazarus Chakwera to reduce the size of his new cabinet. The party says the old one had, in their words, more spectators and less doers. This after the president recently dissolved his cabinet following accusations that the ministers were ineffective and some were corrupt. It also follows pressure from religious and civil society groups who demand the president keep his promise to reshuffle the government after the first 5 months. The group also say a fresh set of advisors is needed to meet the aspirations of the people of Malawi and to resolve the challenges facing the country. Meanwhile, the president late Wednesday named a new partial cabinet with 12 ministers. Two were new, while the other 10 were part of the dissolved board. For the latest developments, VOA's Peter Clotty reached political commentator George Firi, a former lecturer at the University of Livingstonia.
The expectations of Malawians have been that the cabinet this time would be lean and would be composed of people who were not there in the previous cabinet, because the public reacted negatively against the performance of the previous cabinet. And therefore, they expected that the president would make significant changes in the present cabinet. And this shows that the president himself had a trust in the previous cabinet, and probably that's why he never reshuffled it when Malawians expected the reshuffle. And that this time, the many names that have appeared in the new cabinet are the same names. Many Malawians are thinking that the performance may not change as expected.
Out of the 12 ministers he's named, only two are new and 10 are the same people who were part of the old cabinet accused of various acts of corruption. Are expectations going to be different this time?
I don't think so. We will yet to learn from what he has done, because The reason why many Malawians thought that the previous cabinet did not perform, did not deliver according to expectations, was that it was accused of corruption, bribery, theft, and fraudulence. And if we look at those factors, one is yet to know, is yet to learn from the current cabinet whether the performance will be different, because the same names who were accused of underperformance in the previous cabinet are the same names that have reappeared in the new cabinet. And for this, I think Malawians are yet to learn why the president has done it this way, when the expectations were that there will be more new names than the former one.
That was commentator George Philly speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty from Malawi. Nigerian authorities say that the country's life expectancy is among the worst in the world, with influenza and pneumonia the leading causes of death. In southern Nigeria's Cross River State, severe air pollution is increasing the cases of respiratory diseases, as Timothy Obiezu reports from Port Harcourt.
Before leaving for work each day, Port Harcourt resident David Toluadamu dons his face mask. Toluadamu says it's a measure he has been taking since long before the coronavirus pandemic to filter out the sooty air.
Constantly on a daily basis, year in, year out, we have issues with black soot. We breathe in this harmful substance day in, day out, in our sleep, while we walk, when we exercise.
Wearing a face mask is a common practice for many in the oil-rich city, polluted by the activities of illegal oil refineries, flaring gas, and the burning of garbage and tires. The pollution generated by soot escalated in 2016. Health authorities say the soot is increasing respiratory ailments in the state, and that some 23,000 people have been affected in the last 5 years. This month, state authorities began addressing the problem in the affected areas by stopping and criminalizing the illegal refinery practices, says a local government head, Samuel Nwanosike.
If the actions is not affecting our health, who bother? We are the ones here. We are the ones dying. We are the ones feeling pain. I am here every day in Ikwerre local government. Sometimes I open my door, everywhere is turned dark. Meanwhile, it's supposed to be sunshine.
Health authorities say the country's life expectancy of 54 years of age ranks among the five lowest in the world. Respiratory illnesses such as influenza and pneumonia are leading causes of death. Globally, almost 300,000 people died from these ailments in 2018, according to the World Health Organization estimates cited by the group World Life Expectancy. River State authorities blame soot pollution for making the problem worse. Since the start of this year, they have cracked down on illegal refinery operators, arresting more than 20 and shutting down many bases. Critics accuse state authorities of not doing enough to curb pollution. Ibiosia Sukubo is a local chief in Port Harcourt.
The government is only interested in the proceeds of the oil and gas, but they are not interested in the people. They are not interested in the environment. It has pulled our youths into the creeks, to the breaking of pipes and creating artisanal refinery, forgetting the additional health hazard and implication. We are just a victim of circumstance.
For now, River State authorities say they will continue their crackdown on illegal refineries while looking for other ways to keep residents safe from the soot. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Port Harcourt, Nigeria.
Voice of America.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. A busy week in Cameroon's week three of AFCON 2021 is coming to an end. It started off with some tragic news. 8 people died and 38 others were injured in a stampede when fans stormed a stadium hosting an Africa Cup of Nations football match in Yaounde. This week saw a matchup of 16 teams with lots of controversial incidents thrilling plays and some major upsets. Some of the major surprises of the tournament included Equatorial Guinea's dramatic 6-5 penalty shootout victory over Mali in Limbe as they booked their place in the quarterfinals of the tournament. For more on how this second round went, I'm joined by sports reporter and commentator Jonah Byakutaga.
So, Jonah, we're coming to the end of the third week, week three of AFCON 2021. What would you say were some of the highlights of this week in terms of the teams that made it through to the next round or those that, you know, were expected to win but lost?
For starters, I think the Gambia has got to be the one everybody's talking about. They're debutants, their first time at this tournament. They beat Guinea. Guinea may not be a superpower or one of the favorites, but they had some good players. Liverpool's Naby Keita, S. Roma Zamadou Diawara. So they were quite a decent team, as much as Keita didn't play in that game because he was suspended after accumulating yellow cards. But the Gambia, that was the biggest upset so far of this round. I would also pick Equatorial Guinea's victory over Mali in a penalty shootout. I know it's a lottery of the penalties, but I thought Equatorial Guinea upsetting Mali. Mali looked like a side that could cause a few problems.
Mali is a far better ranked team internationally than many of the teams, including Equatorial Guinea, actually.
100%. When I looked at the teams that made the final 16, I got this weird feeling that Mali could be a dark horse. They'd gotten through their group stages. They had a penalty in each of their games in the group stages that was converted by Ibrahim Akone, their marksman. And I thought they would be maybe the dark horse. But it still is a surprise because Equatorial Guinea, nobody expects them to get this far, let alone eject a team of Mali's caliber. So we're just going to go now to the big teams that have surprised. I'll look at the other side of the coin and talk about Ivory Coast in that game against Egypt. Ivory Coast were my favorites for the tournament. I thought they were a very balanced team, no level of expectation, no superstar with all this pressure all over them. And I thought they did okay in the group stages. I was convinced they had a team that's good enough when you have a guy like Wolf Zaha, who plays in the Premier League, on your bench. You have Cornet on your bench. He plays with Burnley. You've got guys like Pepe. Kessie has been a superstar with AC Milan. I thought that team was very good. And the victor in that game between Ivory Coast and Egypt, for me, could well go ahead to win this trophy. I thought either side could have won it. And rightly, it was decided from the penalty spot and by arguably the best player in the world, for sure the best player in Africa, but arguably the best player in the world this season, Mo Salah, scoring that decisive penalty. But yeah, you spoke about Egypt. They had a very slow start to the tournament. They lost to Nigeria. They scrapped 2-1-0 victories and advanced eventually in second place. And lastly, Nigeria, for me. Nigeria had excited everybody. 3 victories in their group stages. They were playing good football, exciting, with so many options on the bench. And they got ejected by a Tunisia side. Now, Tunisia is a giant, but Tunisia had massive COVID cases. Their own coach was not available for that game. About 5 starting players were out with COVID. And it looked like it was assured for Nigeria to get through to the quarterfinals. And guess what? They'll be watching the rest of the tournament like the rest of us are.
It's sad to see them go, but what does it say about the level of competition that many of these matches have ended up in penalties?
Well, I think African football has always been about that. We're not a continent that produces star-studded sides that like to play expansive, exciting football. Most of the African teams play a physical game. And with the exception of the North African sides that tend to pay attention a bit more to technique, most of the other sides are more about physics. So most of those games were scrappy at the beginning. I think we had 9 1-0 victories out of the first 12 games of the tournament. I think only Cameroon with a 2-1 victory in those first 12 games. And then I think the other two were goalless draws. So that showed you the level. One, it shows the gap has narrowed between the super teams and the smaller nations. If you're looking at teams like Comoros and the Gambia appearing for the first time and getting into the knockout stages, eliminating more illustrious opponents. But I think overall, the tournament has grown in stature as we've progressed. I know now we're seeing more penalty shootouts, but that's to be expected. In this latter stage of the tournament, teams are going to be a bit compact and they'd rather defend, especially if you're a smaller team. You'd rather not lose the game than go out and win it.
So, Jonah, as we enter the fourth week, any predictions which team will go through to the semis based on what we saw in week three? In their game earlier this week, in the game between Cameroon and Comoros, Comoros did not field a goalkeeper. Can you explain to us what happened in this case?
Well, for starters, they had 3 goalkeepers at the tournament. 2 of the goalkeepers, Mayadou Seni and Ali Ahmada, tested positive for COVID. And then the third goalkeeper, Salim Ben Boina, who is actually their first choice goalkeeper, was out injured. So all three goalkeepers were unavailable. They had a total of 12 players in their squad testing positive for COVID, and their coach as well. Now that left them with exactly 11 players available. And the rules are simple. If you have 11 players, you get onto the pitch and you chuck an outfield player or you throw an outfield player into the goalposts and the game has to take place. The CAF rules were very clear. At the start of the tournament, teams were informed that games would not be postponed. Teams would have to play as long as they could raise 11 players. An outfield player would be forced to go and go. We didn't think it would happen. It has actually happened.
That was sports reporter and commentator John Abiakutaga speaking to me from Kampala. On AFCON 2021, let's join Samson Omale in Cameroon. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Jackson. Today is rest day at the 2021 African Cup of Nations being hosted by Cameroon, as action will resume in various venues for the quarterfinal. Gambia, Cameroon, Burkina Faso, Tunisia, Egypt, Morocco, Senegal, and Equatorial Guinea are the teams that have booked their places in the quarterfinals. On Saturday, it will be Gambia versus Cameroon, Burkina Faso versus Tunisia. Egypt will face Morocco on Sunday, and the late kickoff on Sunday will be between Senegal and Equatorial Guinea. Ahead of their Saturday's game, Bertrand Traoré, Aston Villa, and Burkina Faso midfielder tells me the team is in good shape and they are looking forward to a great match against the North Africans.
Yeah, at the moment is everything is light, good, but we still focus. We still focus for on the next game. But yeah, we are happy to be here. We're happy to be together. We have a group of friends, brothers. So yeah, we are happy together to be together.
How far do you think you guys can go in this tournament? You have just one game before you get into the semifinal.
I said as long as we are out of the group stage now, anything is possible. Now we need to take game by game. Yeah, we won against Gabon. Now the next one is against Tunisia. So yeah, we are just focused on the game against Tunisia.
One crunch fixture to look out for in the quarterfinal will be the Sunday's game between Egypt and Morocco. The North African derby in the past has not produced much goals, and this time around, Egyptian journalist Ami Fahmy, who spoke with Daybreak Africa Sport in Garoua, says the match will be very technical as both sides understand themselves very well.
We have a tough game against Morocco, North African derby as usual. But like I say, in this kind of games, it's whoever scores first always wins. So hopefully we score first in Yaoundé. So I think all in all, people are very happy, are very satisfied in Egypt, and looking forward to a Morocco's game. Of course, nobody is underestimating Egypt, but I mean, even if Egypt starts the tournament badly, they may have a different face in the playoffs. And that's what happened with the Ivory Coast, with the Cote d'Ivoire, sorry. Morocco is really the most convincing team for me so far.
And after much speculation, the Confederation of African Football has confirmed that the last two matches scheduled to be played in Douala will be moved to the Amadou Ahidjo Stadium in Yaoundé. The last quarterfinals on Sunday between Senegal and Equatorial Guinea, and the first semifinal scheduled for February 2nd are the matches concerned. The decision to shift the other quarterfinal match away from the 60,000-seat Olympic Stadium was made after a meeting between the CAF president Patrice Motsepe and the tournament organizers. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Garoua, Cameroon. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a great weekend. And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voanews.com. You can also connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Just search for VOA Africa. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend, Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sikus, afrobeat to ndumbulo, and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09.05 and 20.05 UTC, right after the international news.